talked to a good many single people, and many of them have the idea that marriage would be the solution to all their problems.
Elizabeth Elliot studied Greek in college with the goal of working as a Bible translator. Shortly after arriving in Ecuador, she married fellow missionary Jim Elliot, who was later killed while trying to reach out to the fierce Alca Indians, also known as the Wadani. Soon after the tragic incident, Elizabeth took her 3-year-old daughter Valerie, and they lived among the same Indian tribe that had killed her husband. Here on Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth shares with us the insights from her remarkable journey as a daughter, mother, wife, widow, and missionary. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about being married but alone. Does that sound strange? Married but alone? I talk to a good many single people, and many of them have the idea that marriage would be the solution to all their problems. They're lonely. Wouldn't it be the solution if you just had somebody to live with and sleep with every day and every night for the rest of your life? Well, it sounds perfect, but it's not perfect. And God has so arranged this universe that nothing is perfect, because if it were, then we would find our satisfaction somewhere other than in Him. Think of it. Every one of our human weaknesses is intelligible to Him. He understands. He shares fully. To be a disciple of Jesus Christ is to have a companion all the time. But that does not mean that we will never suffer loneliness. In fact, it means that we may be lonely in ways we would not have been if we had not chosen to be disciples. Let me explain. When people who are contemplating becoming missionaries ask me, "But what about loneliness?" I tell them, "Yes, you'll be lonely. It's part of the price. Strangers in a strange land are lonely." You accept that in advance as one of the terms of missionary life. As in discipleship, so in marriage. One of the surprises in store for most brides and grooms is that they are still lonely. A common but unreasonable expectation about marriage, and there are a good many unreasonable ones, as we who are married could tell those who aren't. One of those unreasonable expectations is that the partner will now fill the place of everybody on whom one depended before, father, mother, brothers, sisters, and friends. Because falling in love is an all-consuming, preoccupying, and exclusive phenomenon, it can be very hard on all those other relationships which no longer seem to be necessary. But when we get married, we learn very quickly that even the most intimate human companionship cannot satisfy the deepest places of the heart. Our hearts are lonely until they rest in Him who made us for Himself. If there were perfect happiness on earth, who would ever think of heaven? Who needs heaven, we would say. In a question and answer session at a women's conference, I was asked, "What would you say to a daughter who is about to divorce her husband because he isn't meeting all her needs?" There was a ripple of laughter from the audience. The folly of such a demand. I said I would try to point out to the poor girl that she is asking of her husband what can be asked of no human being. Having been married to 3 very different men, all of them fine Christian men, I've found that no one of them, or even, I may say, all 3 of them together, if I had been a polyandrist, could meet all my needs. The Bible promises me that my God, not my husband, shall supply all my needs. Paul Tillich says, "Man and woman remain alone, even in the most intimate union. They cannot penetrate each other's innermost center. And if this were not so, they could not be helpers to each other. They could not have human community." It was a few months ago that I heard that exuberant and blunt woman, Oprah Winfrey, questioning people on what went wrong in their marriage. And almost every one of them was saying, Communication. Communication. He doesn't talk to me. He doesn't communicate. And Oprah said, if I hear that word communication one more time, and you know how she rolls her eyes. Then she turned to an expert in the audience. No, I guess it was an expert on the panel. And an expert usually means anybody who has written a book about anything. And she said, Dr. So-and-so, would you tell us what communication means? And there was a pause and a twinkle in his eye, and he said, it doesn't mean a thing. Thank you, said Oprah. Well, so much for that. But one way or another, we must get through to people occasionally, and we all fail in that sometimes, not only with spouses, but with others. We don't take the time to write the letter, make the phone call, visit, sit down, and listen. And listening is a part of communication. Obviously, it doesn't do much good for any of us to talk if there isn't someone to talk to. And you know how unsettling it is to try to talk to somebody whose eyes are wandering all over the room and whose mind is obviously on anything but what you're trying to tell him. If we're hungry to talk to someone about something, we can't always find anyone who will listen. Some people are gifted communicators, but most of us, gifted or not, could do better. Given the ontological differences which Tillich describes, plus differences in personalities, background, education, language, and interests, communication can never be perfect. But it's not unreasonable to ask for improvement in this area. Jim, Ad, and Lars, my husbands, in that order, have differed in ability. And I've had to learn to be realistic and reasonable in my expectations. Ad, who was a very popular speaker, and the author of 8 books, was, in my opinion, a communicator of the first water. His love letters during our courtship were such masterpieces that I have actually considered publishing them, and thought better of it, as Love Letters of a Theologian. Don't look for the publication of that book. It won't be coming out. But what he thought and felt about me, he knew how to put into words. He did not stop doing that when I became his wife. But I found him strangely reticent to speak of many things which profoundly affected his life, and things which I wanted to talk about. To find someone who reads us, responds wholeheartedly to us, and with real understanding, is a rare gift. Many people find themselves married to partners who are on a totally different wavelength. Their husbands are not meeting all their needs, they might say. They're not communicators. But I would remind those people, look, he's only a man. One of the things which I've sometimes advised prospective brides about is, look, I know that you want to tell your husband everything you're thinking. Don't do it. Have mercy on the poor man. You know, you could bore him to tears. Because the fact is that men and women are different. Did you ever think about that? We're made differently in every way. There are some very important intellectual differences between men and women, but there are some other interesting differences. Hormones, genetics, intellect, different kinds of reasoning, which are peculiar to men and women. So even though you may want to share everything with your husband, and you may have a husband who actually thinks that he wants you to share everything, it really isn't going to work that way, and you might just bore him to tears. And as a friend of mine says, it is a sin to bore people. In fact, it's a sin to bore God. I don't know whether it's possible to bore God, but I have a sneaking suspicion that it might be. Is your husband on a different spiritual wavelength, perhaps? If he is, what is your responsibility as a wife? Preach at him? Nag him? Drag him to church? Make him feel very unspiritual and very silly in front of your so-called spiritual friends? Or do you do it in sneakier ways? Copy out verses and paste them up on his shaving mirror, leave books around, even a book by Elizabeth Elliot open to page so-and-so, which has a real message for this real man. Don't do it. Please don't do it. You know what Peter says in his advice to women who are married to men who are not believers, or as some translations would say, men who are being disobedient. If you think your husband's in that category, maybe he's not a believer at all. Maybe he calls himself a believer and you don't think he acts like one. Maybe he's just not as spiritual as you'd like him to be. Take Peter's advice. He says he may be one without a word being spoken, just by seeing that gentle and quiet spirit. May I see the hands of those of you out there that were born with a gentle and quiet spirit? Of course, I couldn't see your hand even if you were putting it up, but I doubt that many of you would put up your hand. And the voice that you're hearing now is not that of a woman born with a gentle and quiet spirit.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliot. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.